So without further ado, let me introduce our first speaker, Andreas Weingartner, who's the CEO and owner of Escan Messtechnik. Andreas was one of the first to use online UV spectrometry for the controlled role of water treatment process in 1996 and has published results of this work in scientific papers in journals in the area of drinking water treatment, online water quality measurement, and spectroscopy. Furthermore, he has acted as a project manager in several Austrian as well as European research projects in said areas. Since founding Escan in 1999, he's been running the company as managing director, while at the same time keeping ultimate responsibility for research and development strategy and new product development, while still managing the development of the US market as director of Escan USA. Escan Messtechnik is positioning itself as a research-focused private company, and Andreas has overview of consulting roles in projects in drinking water monitoring and implementation of sensors into water security networks being performed in most European countries, several Asian countries, and indeed the USA. So Andreas, I'd just like you to take it away there, please.
Thank you, Connor. Thank you for the introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, I welcome you to my presentation from good morning to good night. Everybody, welcome. It's a big pleasure for me to present an overview on the state of the art of sensors and systems for water quality monitoring with a focus on latest trends and technologies. As Connor had mentioned, I present Escan Messtechnik GmbH in Vienna, Austria, as a manufacturer of sensors, controllers, and software for water quality monitoring. We did quite a lot of multi-sensor or multi-station networks in the recent time, so we do see a mega trend in sensor monitoring networks, and actually this is really the focus that our company looks at. I will have to go through my presentation rather quickly, but if you want, you can drop me an email and I can send you an extended version of the presentation with some more explanations and background.
Andres, if we could have you speak up just a little bit louder, that would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. Traditional sense applications like treatment process control, compliance monitoring and reporting, or environmental monitoring and documentation are still growing, but are not so much in the scope of my presentation, because you might be more interested in where the new trends are, the new segments are, and the fastest growing markets are. So actually these are the four areas that we have identified, and there are certainly more. Like the first one is drinking water quality assurance for small towns and villages, which is actually where most of the accidents, published and non-published, are happening. The second one is remote operation and control of unmanned plants or networks of unmanned plants, which is in the focus of the private water industry because of the involved OPEX costs. The third one would be end-to-end control of water quality in a distribution network, quality assurance closer to the consumer tap, and point of entry protection, including building protection. The fourth one we see is single well protection, wells and plants, single plant control, all on a much smaller scale than we experience it today, even for smallest plants. And you see on my graph, you see that that is something on the mid-term future, probably long-term future. It's not immediately happening. And then the very interesting market of network monitoring, distribution network monitoring for operation and management, and smart water grids is an expression that I think a later speaker will pick up. And you see here that I don't see it yet in the very moment, but it's going to be strong in pretty foreseeable time. Okay, so most of these areas are still in a starting position, and so we get the question sometimes, are probably sensor costs prohibitive? In order to answer this question, I compare three different types of complete drinking water monitoring stations or installations and account all involved costs, as you can see here, CAPEX and OPEX related, as listed here on the left. So what we do compare is a traditional reagent-based cabinet analyzer combination, a non-reagent-based compact sensor station, and an in-pipe installation, actually by two sensors to measure the same full set of parameters. And this is a comparison of the both costs. We can see that a large erosion of CAPEX, including installation costs, when we can compare the yearly CAPEX in this line here, and we see how the CAPEX costs per year erode from the left to the right, from the cabinet analyzers to the in-pipe installation. And we can compare the yearly OPEX. And what is really interesting, the total yearly costs have dramatically reduced by switching technologies, as you can see here, to a third of the traditional systems. The conclusion is, however, as you can see in the last line, in the CAPEX compared to the total costs, that sensor costs are not even the main factor, but all the costs have to be considered and optimized. A typical advantage of in-pipe sensors is the smaller amount of infrastructure costs and the reduced maintenance and operation costs. Now back to the measured parameters, a little quick overview here. We distinguish chemical physical parameters from microbial parameters. Statistically, living microorganisms are the cause of most acute drinking water-related problems, much more than any type of chemical contamination. So the area of intentional contamination maybe being an exception, homeland security, a big thing in the USA. However, chemical physical parameters offer the advantage to measure the substrate, which is always the cause of any growth of microorganisms. So they signal well ahead of any hygienic problems coming up. They are relatively easy to monitor, but cannot clearly predict the occurrence of microorganisms. Microbial monitors, on the other side, would have the advantage to directly measure microbial activity, but the disadvantage is that these measurements come late, if not too late. But the main disadvantage is that actually there is no proven equipment around for that purpose. So a few important research topics are mentioned on this slide too. But let's go on to my next slide, which is another group of quite popular monitors, the toxicity monitors. They do not detect the occurrence of organisms, but they observe living organisms reacting to toxic substances. Again, to my knowledge, there is nothing on the radar that can monitor toxicity in pipes. So what makes a good water sensor in pipe? Parameters should be both sensitive and selective for contamination. They must operate at mains pressure and be mounted and serviced under such pressure. They must be accurate under any occurring flow conditions. Costs are important for sure, CAPEX as well as OPEX. Low power consumption is important. Automatic cleaning is important if needed. No internal drift can be accepted. No reagents, consumables, or replacement parts should be needed in 2 years. And maintenance should be less than 4 times a year. That's the pretty, let's say, strict Bible that I would put on the table here. The parameters that can be measured today are on this list of I would say, in-pipe physical-chemical parameters. So the yellow ones are general parameters. Electrochemical parameters actually measure solid state on chip with or mostly without electrolyte. Then we have optical parameters, the blue ones. They are based on spectrometry mainly, and some special parameters in the lower blue section. And then we have a red section with parameters that we would like to measure in pipe, but we cannot yet. So this leads to a slide of only one method that I pick out, which is UV spectrometry, the method that our company is specialized on. This is the one that is most sensitive in the real world for contaminant detection. On the left side, you can see UV spectra over time, and the time axis is the very right axis here in hours, and you can see or feel the large natural fluctuation of a water body. And with this, can assume that it's not so easy to establish a baseline of the normal fluctuation of that water body. On the right picture, you can see the effect of spiking contaminants, organic contaminants, to the same water body. And even your eyes can easily distinguish the spectrum of a contaminant from the normal spectrum, and you can see the peaks and valleys here. And so even what your eyes can see, our advanced mathematics can do that much better and in real time. And by that, we can we can get alarms for hydrocarbons, benzene, toluene, cetylene, solvents, and many other substances. So in the next slide, I compare 13 proven in-pipe parameters, and we compare sensitivity on the red box, reliability on the blue box, and maintenance needs for each parameter on the yellow box, on the light yellow box. And most important, from the left to the right, the ability to detect water quality issues or contamination is decreasing. So the clear winner in this graph is organic carbon-derived parameters like the UV spectrum, DOC, TOC, and others that catch the dissolved organic pollutants, as well as any suspect change of the water composition. Turbidity here is still the most popular parameter, but not because it's such a good parameter, but simply because it has been easy and cheap to measure, and simply there was nothing else around that could find the way into the norms and standards. Actually, it's almost impossible to define a normal baseline on turbidity in a distribution network, and therefore it's almost impossible to catch any events or contamination in the real world based on turbidity. The US EPA recommends to monitor TOC, turbidity, chlorine, and pH in distribution networks in a recent publication, and that's a very much became a standard in the United States.
Hi, Andreas. Just to let you know, you're just coming up to time now.
Sorry?
You're just coming up to your time now, so if you could start wrapping things up. Thank you.
Okay, so I show just three examples of monitors. The first one is LED-based spectrometer, the so-called iScan. It can measure color, UV, organics, and turbidity. The second one is the IntelliSonde. It's a compact in-pipe multi-parameter probe. It can measure a lot of electrochemical parameters. Third one is the CAP 3000, manufactured by Enditec, and it does four electrochemical parameters. If we compare them in that overview here, we can see that the iScan measures altogether eight parameters. The IntelliSend measures even more at a bit higher price tag, and the CAPTER does a smaller set of parameters at a very low price tag. Anyway, what we can also see here is the combination of an optical probe with an electrochemical probe will complete the set of parameters and information on water quality that can be reliably measured by today's state of the art. Finally, in order to show what such sensors can do in real life, allow me to present a few concrete projects where a substantial number of sensors or stations are deployed in the network respectively. And this one is done by CH2M Hill in the United States. It's their contamination prevention solution. You can see a map with monitoring stations. They integrate all kind of information coming from the SCADA system and the SAP system, like customer complaints, laboratory values, and so on. And we see a display of parameters over time, a dashboard display. We can see the parameters on a graphical display, for example, DOC, TOC, nitrate, pH, turbidity, and so on, for each station separately or in comparing the station. And this is a representation of leaks per month from the ACP station. So a very comprehensive and very, very complete solution. This is a solution that was done in Canada by the TSAC. It's a technical company that works for First Nations of Canada, and they have a very interesting network of drinking water protection stations that protect villages that are scattered throughout the country. And a very innovative, very large project with 50 villages protected. And another one, a very nice one in India, it's the Ganges project, where the Central Pollution Control Board in the Delhi area has started to deploy 10 stations, in which is the start of a larger deployment, over 100 stations over all of the Ganges River along 5,000 kilometers. The Hydro-G is the central monitoring system, how you can get into that system. I think it's public and can be accessed by almost everybody. You see, again, the representations of graphical trends. And just as a outlook, my very last slide here is, for sure, we want to know where are the sensors moving to, and there is a few remarks I can make here. The best suited sensors for reliable measurement are optical sensors, in my opinion, especially if under line pressure. For a few parameters, we will need electrochemical sensors like chlorine, but they have to prove their stability and reliability. It has not yet happened yet. For monitoring networks, we don't need more sensors or methods. We need a more reliable, intelligent, and transparent sensors, which will be the focus in the next 5 years, I believe. Then after that, all sensors will have an IP address and understand the internet protocol. So smartphones will be able to talk to the sensors, and the local controllers will lose importance. In the next 10 years, I see that all other involved devices, like pumps, valves, actuators, and so on, will also have IP addresses, and they will all talk to each other and be able to communicate and send their data to the cloud. And the last thing I foresee is that large market player will take over the central data management, because this will become an integral part of infrastructure management. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That was my presentation.
Thank you, Andreas. That was very, very useful. And there's a lot in there. I think we would be delighted to maybe dig into little further into some of your slides in the questions and answer session, particularly in your final slide. I think there's a lot there to be discussed. But moving on to our next speaker is Ami Perez, who's Director of Engineering Systems at Visenti. Ami is co-founder of Visenti, and he received his BSc, MSc, and PhD in Civil and Environmental Engineering from Technion, Israel, the Institute of Technology. His research at Technion dealt with multi-objective management of water distribution system security using optimization and machine learning techniques. Since 2008, he's worked at the Center for Environmental Sensing and Modeling, an interdisciplinary research group of the Singapore MIT Alliance for Research and Technology, which goes under the SMART acronym. All of this under the WaterWise project. Ami's expertise lie in the hydraulic analysis of water distribution systems based on real-time hydraulic data and on implementing optimization methods to improve water system operation. So, Ami, if you could go ahead.
Sure. Thanks for the introduction. I will talk about our project in Singapore. Let me give a quick background about our startup company. We are a very young company, Visenti, founded in 2011 and work very closely with the PUB, the National Water Agency of Singapore. And in the next slide, I will give more information about our current project. So just a quick background, the problem that we are facing, I assume that many of you are aware what are the problems water utilities are facing these days. Many utilities have frequent service disruptions resulting from the aging infrastructure. Utilities have high operational costs, mainly for energy use. Pumping costs about 20% of the total annual expenses. In addition to that, 30% or more is being lost through leaks, bursts, or faulty meters. And this even increases the energy waste. There's a lot of uncertainty in the utility operator decision because we are dealing with networks that are aging. Many pipes are over 50 years old, and the real-time dynamics of this network is not well understood or known. In addition, there's just a lack of data. There's not enough measurements being taken inside the distribution system. Many utilities collect data. They collect it from the boundaries, from service reservoirs, from pumping stations, from water tanks, but there's not enough data being collected from the distribution system within the network. So just to summarize, what are the current gaps? So currently, not enough monitoring data. Because there's no real-time data, most of the analytics is being performed offline. Utilities usually perform calibrations of hydraulic modeling of their hydraulic models offline because the lack of the real-time data from within the network, and many operations are being performed without sufficient impact assessment. So in order to bridge the gap, what utilities really need is a fundamental backbone that includes the real-time monitoring, and then the applications like online hydraulic modeling, the real-time analytics, and the end-to-end decision support. And all these applications need to be integrated with the legacy systems. We need to capture all the experience of the utility officers, the utility engineers, their information to incorporate it together with the software and the analytics tool. So what we are doing here in Singapore, we have a few projects with the PUB working in a few networks in Singapore. We have a three-layer solution. The first layer includes optimal sensing. So here, sensors are deployed at optimal locations, both for hydraulic and water quality applications, and sensors transmit data wirelessly. We optimize the sensor location because we want to reduce the CapEx cost of the utility. We don't want that the utility will spend too much on the hardware. So we really minimize the number of sensors that you need to deploy in the utility, but still get the maximum effectiveness. Then data is being transmitted to our cloud solution. And this cloud has a decision support tool and analytics tool. These tools get the data they transmitted through the cell phone network and perform analytics for leak and burst detection, water contamination detection. Once events are detected, classified, and localized, real-time email and SMS notifications are being sent to the relevant officers in the utility. And then the third tool that we're implementing is the decision support tool. Here we have a set of applications that involves around hydraulic modeling. Here we have water demand prediction tool, a operational support tool for pipe repairs, and I think the most exciting application is the pump optimization that showed great potential in reducing energy costs in Singapore, over 20% reduction in the energy cost. So when we talked about real-time sensing, it really doesn't come by itself. It's not just the data. It's also the understanding of the network, the understanding of the hydraulics of the network, collecting all the data that is available from the SCADA system, understanding the boundary conditions of the network, looking at the customer billing records. So really, in order to maximize the effectiveness of the application, we really need to collect all the data that is available and audit the utility in a way to understand how they operate the system and how the real-time sensing application can be the most effective. So our sensing technology is an in-house technology that we developed together with our partners from YSI and Xylem. And this is a multi-probe that include hydraulic and water quality parameters. Here we're really focusing in a relevant parameters that we found really effective for our applications. So we combine pressure, acoustic, and flow data for our hydraulic application like leak detection and hydraulic modeling. pH and ORP are giving us good proxy for chlorine levels in the network. And then the rest of the applications, some of them are optical, give good indication for organic matter in the utility. So this set of measurements, I think, has a really competitive cost, very flexible, easy deployment, connect to our telemetry unit that sends the data wirelessly to our cloud server, and then data is being analyzed and helps the utility to reduce their operational costs. So here in Singapore, we already deployed about 50 units, and we are expanding. And here you can see different set of data traces. All this data is analyzed in real time to find events and also being used to support our hydraulic modeling application. So as I mentioned, the data is being sent to our cloud solution or the cloud framework. And this is because utilities really don't want to invest too much in a IT infrastructure, expensive IT infrastructure. So here we have a secure, I think very secure according to the most restricted standards, a cloud solution that is also scalable and modular. And this hosting the data and also we run all the applications on this framework. So, and this slide shows the suite of applications that we are currently implementing in Singapore. The first one is the leak and burst detection and the water quality event detection in the downtown area of Singapore. Here, events are detected in real time, classified whether there are critical leaks or less critical leaks, and based on that, real-time alerts are being sent to the utility, and the utility send their field officer to the location that we identify, and then they're doing the relevant operation to fix the leak. Here, what we see many times is that our detection come a few hours before water bursts above ground, and many times the utility can actually fix the leak before there's a visual impact, and it can save a lot of money to the utility and also improve the PR of the utility, where the public doesn't see water bursting in all these events. Other applications that you can see are the real-time hydraulic modeling and the demand prediction. This is an application that supports many hydraulic modeling-based solutions, like the pump optimization that I mentioned earlier, that showed over 20% reduction in energy costs in the project that we have. Once we have the good demand prediction, we can also do water quality simulation, like water age and source tracking simulation. Utilities are very concerned about the age of water in the system. They want to know which section in the system have high water age, and then they will go and flush the water. And with this tool, we are supporting this kind of operations. The last tool that we are implementing here in Singapore is the valve operation simulation. And here, a utility wants to fix a leak. This tool basically tells them what are the most important valves to close in order to isolate the leak with minimum impact on the consumers or on the system. And all these applications basically are supported by real-time sensing data. Without real-time sensing data, we cannot implement all this application and basically help the utility reduce their operational costs. I think the two main applications that we see are technological breakthroughs that are allowed through real-time online sensors are the leak detection and the hydraulic modeling. And here, it's really exciting when you can find these leaks in real time immediately when they happen, and the utility can send the teams to fix the leak before this event becomes critical and have negative impact on the utility through water loss and damages to the environment through water flooding the surrounding. Being able now with the real-time sensing to implement real-time hydraulic modeling is really, I think, a game changer when currently the current mode of operation is the offline calibrations of utility once a year or even in longer intervals. And here we have a system that can actually do these calibrations every day and capture all the new development that's happening in the system, and the utility can actually use the real-time hydraulic model to simulate events in the system, and they can also trust the simulation results because it's done frequently, and we also verify that the simulation results fit actual measurements, actual real-time measurements from the system. So to summarize it, I think it's quite clear these days that when we talk about smart water grid, smart water grid cannot be implemented without real-time sensing and real-time monitoring. And really, utilities will see, I think, significant ROI once they do the initial investment in putting sensing, sufficient sensing within the network, and then being able to implement all the applications that can help them to save money later on, as we do in Singapore. Thank you.
So, thank you very much, Ami. That was an excellent presentation, and it's great to see the the gains that are currently being made through the application of these real-time monitoring systems in Singapore. So moving quickly on, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Neil Townend, who's the Managing Director of the Monitoring Division of Modern Water PLC.
Hello.
Neil leads monitoring division and is responsible for increasing sales and market penetration for Modern Water's leading water monitoring technologies. He has over 20 years of commercial experience in the environmental and water sectors, and Neil has previously held technical positions in environmental consultancy with RPS Consulting and SGS Group, and senior commercial roles in sales and marketing with Chemiviron Carbon, the European operation of Calgon Corporation. So Neil, if you could take the ball and provide us with your presentation.
Right, I hope. Can you hear me okay, everybody?
Yes, sir.
Marvellous. Okay, right. Excuse, I'm struggling to get onto my presentation. I do apologize.
Remember to go ahead and click the arrow that points to the right.
Sorry, I found it. My hardware's not doing what it should be, so I do apologize. Just bear with me. Ah, there we go. I've had some fun and games with my laptop this morning. It seems to have a mind of its own at the moment. I think I might have dropped it too many times. So, anyway, thank you very much for the introduction, and I'm taking up more of my time as we speak. So what I wanted to do was just explain who we were as a company and then talk about the relevance of monitoring to us as an organization. So obviously you've had the introduction about my background. I've been involved in water monitoring and water quality and water treatment for 20 odd years, and prior to that a background in environmental chemistry by education. So Modern Water as a company was founded in 2006 and listed on the AIM, the alternative investment market in the UK. We raised a significant amount of capital to bring advanced water treatment and monitoring technologies to the market. So at the time, I have to say, we had a few patents and some great ideas and some academic studies on some products and benchtop-developed products with a view to commercializing and bringing these to the market. So from that early start, we're focusing on novel forward osmosis technologies and an online toxicity monitoring technology. So the steady expansion of the group, we've also brought in some additional treatment technologies, which one is focused around electrocoagulation, and another is focused on seawater recycling for developments close to the coastline, which can then utilize salt water in toilet systems, etc. The monitoring side is my responsibility. So within the monitoring group, we have a range of products testing for toxicity, heavy metals, VOC, THMs, some new products based around fluorimetry for petroleum, hydrocarbons, and algae. And then some older technologies, but nevertheless very effective for immunoassay test kits. So the whole emphasis of our group on the monitoring side is to give data, whether it's in time, online, real time. So whether it's a kit that allows you to take a result there and then, or it's an online monitor or an inline monitor that gives you immediate results. So we have a range of, say, portable and online instruments. So from our early roots, we've expanded quite significantly and have offices in the UK, USA, Middle East, South Africa, Japan, and China. So why is monitoring? I'll spend 2 seconds. So we, just to explain, we span out originally from Cardiff University with the monitoring technology. The other technology that we have on the treatment side came out of the University of Surrey, which is the forward osmosis technology. As I explained before, we listed on the AIM and raised a substantial amount of money in order to take these concepts and take these the IP that we owned into a commercially viable product or products. So the first, on the monitoring side, the first product, the CTM or continuous toxicity monitor, took approximately 18 months to come from university lab to market. So it can be a challenging process, as I'm sure some of you are aware, to bring almost disruptive technology to the market. So this is a whole different way of thinking about how you monitor the toxicity and how you actually take a rapid reading on every few seconds. So part of our strategy is then to expand the monitoring division, and this has occurred with the acquisition of some established technologies. So Cogent Environmental primarily have the trace metal technology based around anodic stripping voltammetry. And this is proving to be a very interesting market across the world, as people want to look at metals on online or with a portable instrument down to extremely low detection levels. We also made an acquisition, SDIX Water and Environmental Division, and this essentially is the Microtox product, DeltaTox product, and some of the immunoassay product brands. This again has been a product that's been around for a long while, but essentially our online toxicity product is based essentially on the same luminescent bacteria. So it was a very good fit for us. Quite often I would promote our product by calling it an online version of Microtox, because Microtox has a very strong reputation in the marketplace. So, as I say, the focus of ourselves is really on the online and in time. And now we have a range of established products, and we're bringing new things to the market, collaborating with small companies and universities and doing our own research and development into new opportunities for different applications. So, again, this I'm sure probably isn't alien to a lot of you, but the market opportunity for monitoring is substantial. Monitoring and testing, I should say. So is it better to have a fixed capital base of laboratories everywhere, whether it's throughout the US or throughout Europe? And then what's the challenge there? Do you get your results immediately? Probably not. Do the samples correlate every time? Possibly not. So with respect to an online or in-time monitoring system, then there are certain advantages and there's certain opportunities there in the marketplace. So predictions on growth for monitoring and testing are around 10% for developing markets and predictably around 5% for developed markets. Oops. Bear with me, there we go. This slide really is to highlight some of the more recent and more relevant issues happening around the world. And this, for me, is where the excitement is in monitoring. I think there was a very famous business motto that looked at business analysis many years ago, and the adage is, what you cannot measure, you can't manage. And this is so typical of what we see in either water or environmental situations. So, as I say, you know, the first stage for any cleanup or any improvement of water quality around the world has to be the ability to measure what's there. So everybody needs to design a treatment process on some data. So as you can see here, some of the snapshots, I mean, Beijing, the five-year plan for environmental protection, there's some very strong focus on major pollutants, particularly heavy metals, but there's a whole host of things that they're looking at there. The Prime Minister in India has recently made a huge commitment to looking at the pollution in the River Ganges. I mean, this is going to take years and years of monitoring to establish where the problems are. Rio.
I think it's important to know you've got finish up in the next minute, that'd be great.
No problems. So Rio, Paris, as you can see from the list on the slide, there's a number of significant countries looking at significant problems with water quality. Okay, so just to show where we fit in the landscape, and again, we're a medium-sized player. We work with companies at the lower end who are keen to get their products out to market and need some extra development work and see us as a very interesting proposition. Again, we're not trying to play in the space of HAC and ABB and Siemens. We look for innovative technologies. We're not looking for technologies that everybody has. We're looking to solve problems that may already be there or problems for the future with respect to novel and innovative monitoring technologies. Okay, so the strategy is, you know, depth, not width. We want innovative products.
Sorry, we're we're actually just kind of getting caught for time here, so if you could just finish up, that'd be great.
No problems. Okay, so as I say, we're looking to source and acquire innovative products and leverage through our channels to market. So we can. That involves our own development, involves working with partners, or it may involve acquisition, depending on the company's focus. And there we go, my 8 minutes.
Thanks very much, Neil. And you know, it was great to get the commercial perspective on, you know, why this is such an attractive area and why there's so much investment and acquisition going on. So without further ado, I'd just like to introduce our final speaker of the afternoon, or morning, or evening, wherever you are, is Marc Le Chevalier, Director of Innovation and Environmental Stewardship at American Water. Marc has worked for American Water since 1985 and currently directs the research and environmental compliance programs, including the development of environmental management plans for more than 1,000 operating centers, environmental audits to ensure compliance, development of a national cross-connection control program, and implementation of the Environmental Stewardship and Greenhouse Gas Control Program. And crucially, he also leads the company's innovation development process, which tests and develops new technologies and processes for use in the company and the water industry as a whole, which I'm sure you're going to be speaking about now, Marc. So if you could take it away, that'd be great.
Sure, thanks.
I think I'm looking like the speaker, Andreas, but Marc should be the speaker on the panel. Thanks.
Now, can you hear me?
Hi, Marc. Yeah, we can hear you. Sorry about the technical issue.
Okay. So, exactly. It's that last hat that I wear that we'll be talking about that. In 4 years ago, American Water developed this innovation development process, particularly because many startup companies had interesting technologies and that could solve problems for water utilities, but not a clear route to test and validate and find early adoptions and then grow those technologies through market acceptance. And that was exactly what our innovation development process was designed to do, using a stage gate process and a mechanism to leverage our national presence to help test and validate technologies. And our innovation development process is considered this bridge between research or early proof of concept or early technologies to an early adoption. And then with that validation of those technologies, we can replicate the acceptance of that technology through the American Water system and then help our technology provider gain market acceptance. We are a utility. We don't plan to own or acquire the IP, but if the technologies help us solve our problems, we represent about 5% of the market of utilities in the United States, served by populations. So that probably means if it works for us, it probably works for the other 95% as well. And our laboratory is the footprint of American Water. Perhaps some of our participants aren't aware, we're a large utility water and wastewater. We operate our own 325 drinking water systems, 225 wastewater systems, about 40 reclaimed water systems, and we operate the desalination treatment plant under contract for Tampa Bay Water. So pretty much if it's wet, we cover it, and there's an opportunity then to be thinking about how do we improve operations. One of our first technologies that we looked at was a Canadian company called Embala Power Networks. And the advantage of this technology is it uses our existing assets, our pumps and technologies that use energy, by providing a real-time connection to the power grid. And so we piloted this in a pumping station in Pennsylvania and found on real-time, second by second, the Embala technology is monitoring the power grid and looking at for power balance and providing a signal to our SCADA system that could either increase or decrease our pumping in response to providing grid balance. The nice part about that is that as it essentially acts as an energy supplier back to the grid, of which then utility can get paid for that grid balance. And so We're in the process of replicating this and other utilities in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and much like our IDP model, encouraging other utilities to join in as well. The larger number of utilities participating provides a greater advantage to that grid balance. One of our first technologies that was a pilot to our innovation program was a technology called MLOG, which was an acoustic monitor for detecting main breaks. And the middle graph there shows is listening for the acoustic signal within the pipe. Between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. each night, it wakes up and listens for a signal. And there it shows around January 22nd, it's first saw a leak. Get back to... this was able to, as a low-cost monitor, these...
Mark, let me just jump in here. Remember to advance your slides, please.
I'm advancing.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, something happened where we went back to the beginning that wasn't under my control. So we're seeing the this leak detection integrity. And at any rate, so this was a very effective technology, resulted in a 50% reduction in non-revenue water within the first few weeks and had a very quick payback. But more importantly, now that we can see when pipes first start to leak, we could use that as a predictive tool around the condition, the assessment of the condition of the pipes, and use it as a way for predicting main repairs. The next technology we looked at, also related to water meters, is collecting the data when water meters flow backwards, because that could be a potential cross-connection and water quality problem in the distribution system. And this slide shows here that this cluster of red dots here showing that these water meters were flowing backwards during a particular main break. The existing technology providing more information than just reading meters. And in this study, we found about 1% of the meters in a number of different systems were showing this evidence of backflow. Another technology around meter reading is this a smarter technology. It was a small startup company from the southeast United States, and had a technology to allow us to essentially provide a universal a decoder for meters, so that we could read any vendor's meters and do meter data management without having to be locked into a particular vendor. This has been very successful in the United States for American Water, and we migrated 3.1 million meters in a period of about 5 months to this technology, and it's been working great for us and allowed us to reduce the cost of managing our meter data. Also, a new technology we just signed contracts with is a device that can attach to existing pressure-reducing valves and make them essentially smart valves, recognizing at night when flows through the system are low, the pressure-reducing valve can automatically reduce pressure in the distribution system. This will result in less leakage and fewer main breaks. And we're in the process of evaluating this technology at 5 locations across American Water. Biological treatment in the United States is also becoming of higher interest. And in this study, we used oxygen probes before and after biological filters to show the level of microbial activity on the filter. And when we put that net difference, we can see that during the summer months, the oxygen removal across the filter could give us a measurement of the performance of the filters, and now we could use this as a way of monitoring and managing the filters and understanding here in the blue when filters are removing carbon by biological mechanisms and when are they removing organic carbon by physical methods.
Hi, Mark. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to give you a time warning. It would be great if you could finish up in the next minute so we can just jump into the questions and answers. Thank you.
Fine. The last slide here is around desalination. Lots of opportunities to monitor biofouling on reverse osmosis membranes and working with a Dutch consortium on technologies for removing the biofilm, and we've developed a saltwater assimilable organic carbon assay using bioluminescent organisms to measure the nutrients in the water supply. So just to wrap up, the water industry faces many challenges, and rapid online monitoring can help utilities become more efficient. The bottom line in all of these is that the technology was able to help us solve an operational problem and result in operational savings. And by having essentially a validation shop to bring technology in and validate them can be a mechanism to make the water industry more aware of the potentials that these technologies have for cost savings and operational improvement. And with that, I turn that back over to you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Excellent presentation. I think it gives a clear indication of the type of real-time monitoring technology that an end user, such as a utility, is looking to see. So we have questions coming in, so I'm just going to jump right in, if that's okay. Just to get things started, there's a very large question, a very broad question after coming in from one of our panelists, asking what the top technologies for leak detection, detection of heavy metal ions, and E. coli bacteria are. I guess first I'd like to put this to Andreas.
Leak detection is probably not really my special area, and I'm just trying to see the question. What was the other one? Iron and E. coli. I can make a remark on E. coli. I mean, the only technology I know that is online is actually a measurement of the enzymatic activity of bacteria, which does seem to correlate with E. coli activity. It's an Austrian company that does it. And otherwise, it's still not really an online technology, as far as I know. There is research on optical methods, laser-based methods to identify or distinguish bacteria by their size and form from mineralic matter, but that is all, I would say, in the research field. Iron, what question, iron fouling?
Heavy metal ions.
Oh, heavy metal heavy metal ions, yeah, that's still, there's nothing on the sensor side that I can see or expect. It's still the reagent-based analytical analyzers that are being used for that, heavily in China, in industrial emissions, for example, but nothing on a, let's say, sensor format that I can see or expect.
Does anyone else have any views or want to jump in on that question? The top technologies for detection?
I guess that on the heavy metal ions, I'm very biased. So we obviously have an online trace metal analyzer, which effectively works on a nodic strip voltammetry. As Andreas quite rightly points out, it is a method that's been around for a long while, but it's proven and works extremely well. On the E. coli, I guess I would agree with Andreas. There is some good flow cytometry stuff and laser stuff, and it's all very new, but I think we're probably going to see the opportunity for some of those coming out fairly soon, I guess. You can, of course, look at bacteria from an ATP perspective as well, although that's less effective.
Sorry, go ahead, Amy.
Yeah, just to add on the leak detection, rather speaking on specific products, the technologies are really, and it's relevant to what we're talking here, is relevant to the sensing data that you have. Basically, the current technologies for leak detection are based on either acoustic pressure and flow measurements. Acoustic is very good to detect background leak And the pressure, mainly pressure, is good for detecting real-time events. Taking the measurements and analyzing to find the abnormality, there are many tools and mathematical tools, statistical tools to find the abnormalities. And based on that, you can also afterwards localize the location, because detecting a leak is good to know that you're losing water, but it's not really helpful for the utility. They need to know where. So localizing the leak is quite important, and this is based on understanding the hydraulics, the physics, the topology of the network.
Right. This is Mark Lischweid. The advantage of the acoustic monitor is that it was able to be put into the meter pit along with the automatic metering network. And so we use the technology of transferring the meter data to also piggyback on that, the acoustic monitoring data, so that advanced metering infrastructure, as it's called now, really becomes a mechanism of conveying information across the distribution system, and whether it's acoustic monitors or pressures or water quality data, part of the first issue is here is how do we get a network of reporting data real time, and then really becomes a question of what are the challenges the utilities have, and which of those have the greatest cost benefit.
Have any further questions?
Sorry, one question I do have based on this question is mentioned in the slide, mentioned in your answers to this question. The current technologies that will be implemented in a infrastructure side network and controls system are largely readily available, ready to go, and don't require much additional technological innovation. So based on that, what will be the main drivers for, let's say the uptake and development of, online E. coli monitoring or indeed online heavy metal monitoring? From an end user perspective, where would be the driver for uptaking these things? I mean, from your presentation, it's pretty clear where the immediate, revenue benefits are from, leak detection, process optimization. Mark.
Yeah, I'll take that. We've looked at a number of online water quality analyzers from E. coli to heavy metals and the rest. And the question comes, how does utilities save money by being able to monitor E. coli online versus, take it to a laboratory and measure it within 24 hours? Now, the regulations are set now, so they require monitoring, at least in the United States, they require monitoring at specific locations. So some of the challenges is having, one would, in order to comply with the regulations, have to have monitoring all across the system, and that's a very expensive proposition. Part of the problem is trying to change the regulatory construct so that we could have a few monitoring stations, which I believe around the clock would be better, but could report that on a continuous basis. But so sometimes the regulations become an inhibitor to technology development. And other times the question is, because it's faster, how does the utility, how does that result in an operational savings? Because almost always the technology is more expensive than the existing the monitoring. So we've really struggled with water quality monitors, because while we can get the data faster, and that may help us, and certainly great, for the most part, we don't have water quality problems, so it's that constant monitoring. But how does utility result in a payback for that investment technology? And so you can see most of the technology we worked on are related to issues that cause utilities, cost, main breaks, non-revenue water, energy, you know, pressure, and it's an easier chance to make a business case around those monitors than something around water quality, which we generally don't have problems with. So it's trying to find a rare event, making an investment to find something that, you know, probably doesn't happen.
Yeah, and actually a question just started coming in, you know, slightly related to that point is, for the program that American Water are involved in, what is the anticipated return on investment needed for you to jump in on a new project?
There isn't a hard and fast, you know, above this line, below this line, we wouldn't do that. Obviously, the technologies we all have found had very very good returns. We're looking at technologies that would not only drive operational savings, but also improve environmental sustainability, better serve our customers, better leverage our capital budget. So oftentimes, I mean, certainly if it has a positive ROI, that's great. But I wouldn't emphasize that it wouldn't necessarily have to be, you know, the total answer, provided that you know, the technology provide other ways of serving our customers or protecting the environment better. But, you know, certainly out of the gate, something that reduces an operating cost is beneficial, because we're more than ready to make a capital investment, which we can depreciate, over an operating cost, which is just a pass-through, you know, in a water bill.
Okay. Yeah, that makes complete sense. A question that's just come in relation to the pathogen monitoring, and it's in relation to direct potable reuse, and that, you know, the drive in growth in direct potable reuse, is that a potential driver for the uptake of online pathogen monitoring?
I guess it opens. If you want, I can give an answer to that, Andreas.
Please, Andreas.
Actually, I don't really see online pathogen monitors at the moment, it will be quite hard to think about finding them. What I do see is, and I have mentioned it in my presentation, is that we call it substrate monitoring. That means by monitoring critical parameters of the substrate, including organic stability, temperature, possibly nutrient, you get a pretty nice correlation to all kind of organisms. And the good thing about that is you see a change very early, most of the times you can see it before any difficult situations arise. That means I'm very much for substrate monitoring, matrix monitoring, for sure, hoping and expecting that one day monitors will come out that will be selective enough to distinguish forms of bacteria or pathogens or viruses or whatsoever. I don't really see it yet.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll agree with this. Mark LeChevalier, and I'm just finishing my role as a chair of the U.S. Water Reuse Research Foundation, and this is an active area of research, so we're certainly interested in seeing technology that could develop for pathogen detection, but it's certainly not on the, you know, not ready for application today. So I would continue encourage those that are developing such systems to do so, but recognize that, you know, probably a market for that is still a little bit down the road.
Okay. A quick question that's after coming in that maybe either Neil or Andreas could address. I know, Andreas, you mentioned this on your presentation. Has anybody come across the use of aquatic species for monitoring toxic chemicals in drinking water?
Again, I'm extremely – sorry, Neil here. I am extremely biased, again, on this one. The microtox process uses bioluminescent bacteria to monitor toxicity, essentially, so on the principle of light emittance. So when the bacteria is happy in clean water, it glows extremely well, and if it comes up against a toxicant, then the light, the glow from that bioluminescent bacteria is inhibited. So we monitor the the rate of inhibition. We call it EC50, which is correlated with an LD50. So yes,
And we have an online version of that and a portable and a lab-based. And, you know, not wanting to advertise, MicroTox has been around for many years and has proven to have sort of significant number of chemicals that people have tested against in peer-reviewed papers, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of other species, then the whole effluent toxicity program in the U.S. clearly identifies other species such as Daphnia and mollusks. There are some gaping mollusk applications and fish that could be interesting. So,
sure, Andreas, do you want to add to that?
Just a remark on there was heavy research on fish, clams, and other species, larger species, invertebrates, in the full phase of homeland security research in the USA in the last, let's say, 10 years. So I think there is a lot of not only let's say research results available, but also marketable product that could be used and looked at. So it's a pretty well-developed method, I would say. Actually, in the city of Vienna, fish were used in the pipe, in the mains pipe, has been used, I think, 150 years ago already. But it was people watching the fish and watching the behavior that happened in those times.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of the earliest adaptations of that.
Okay, moving on. Another question is after coming in asking, does anyone have an opinion about DNA or enzyme-based sensor technology?
In any specific application or
question? Shall we say in, let's say, municipal water or wastewater applications? The question wasn't specific to that. Metals, in specific.
Yeah.
Actually, the
there is a product, isn't there? Which I don't know whether these guys are quoting. I think I've not had much exposure to it, but it sounds quite interesting. Again, with a lot of monitoring technologies, you know, we all have our problems with water matrices. So the challenge in a lot of cases isn't necessarily the concentration of the metals, it's the quality of the water that you're trying to analyze. So this is where the pretreatment and the more effective methods are better in some waters and others are better in others. So colorimetry, for example, in metals, it works very well if your water is very clean, but outside of potable water, then you may struggle with some technologies. I don't necessarily have a huge amount of experience with the DNA-based technologies, but it could well prove to work very well in a clean water and maybe not in a dirty water. Or again, I'd be interested to hear if anybody else has any experience. It's very interesting.
Sure. Anyone want to jump in there?
Again, it would kind of depend on the application. For drinking water, you know, if the source of the metals was in the water supply, you know, the treatment would be designed. So there isn't particularly a large need for monitoring within the distribution system. Now, if you're on an industrial treatment process, that would be entirely different. So it's a matter of kind of finding the right market for that.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge for the DNA-based technology. Is it robust enough to handle the water that needs the metals monitoring? You know, is it predominantly in polluted river systems and maybe even some groundwater systems, but industrial wastewaters? Can it cope with that, or does it need a level of pretreatment, or are we looking at dissolved metals, or are we looking at total metals? And there's a whole question about the validation against laboratories, and this is the thing that we come up against significantly. Even when we're right, we're wrong, because the lab has a different result. So it's the challenge for online and on the spot analysis. Sometimes, as I say, the laboratory, one laboratory can give a result of X, and another can be 20% different, and both laboratories are effectively right, and you know we could be in the middle and we might be wrong because we're different, but that's the challenge. And as I say, I think it would be interesting to see how it copes with, as you quite rightly say, Mark, is where do they need to monitor the metals, which is typically in waters that are challenging.
So just a question that's being just for Ami. Ami, you mentioned a range of applications of your the smart water network that's being applied in Singapore, and the question is in relation to where have your customers found the most value in terms of a return on investment, or in terms of revenue of the the range of applications that your smart water network provides. Is it in the leak detection? Is it the pump optimization? Is it the water quality parameters?
Yeah, I think the right on spot, the two main applications that provided the, I think, immediate ROI were firstly the pump optimization. I think the costing of the project was covered after 1 year with a 20% energy saving. And basically now the utility keep gaining the saving and save more and more money. So here was immediate ROI, a straightforward calculation of the ROI, and lots of benefits to the utility. The other application, as you mentioned, the leak detection. So here it's a little bit more complicated to calculate the ROI. Like what is the cost of water that you save, or the more efficient response to the event, or the prevention of lawsuits from damages caused by flooding. So there's many elements here, but at the end of the day, the fact is that this is the two applications that the utility that we work with very closely, PUB, immediately invested, and this is our two biggest projects, basically. So I think these two applications, at least for us, in our current operations, and the feedback that we get from our customers, providing the most, I think, significant ROI. We have other projects with other utilities, for example, in the U.S., where they actually were interested in real-time hydraulic modeling, and the reason was because I think the senior engineer was about to retire, and the young engineer didn't really understand fully the network's hydraulics. And for him, it was really important to capture the experience, the knowledge of the experienced engineer into a software a tool. And for him, this application was more important. So I think different utilities, they have different pain points. Some utilities, actually, water quality might be the most important application and so on. So it's really a project dependent, utility dependent.
Okay, yeah, I mean that makes sense. It's just again, it harks back to one of the things that Mark was saying in relation to water quality monitoring versus the actual revenue generating applications. Now, an interesting question is after coming in that leads to a larger question. Everyone seems to focus moving to the cloud. However, many government agencies, institutions, utilities, big corporations do not allow cloud-based storage systems. How are the likes of Visenti and other people who are rolling out smart water networks planning to deal with this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there's many, many concerns from utilities about cloud-based infrastructure. And it takes... And I think here it requires education process to show the utilities that this infrastructure, the cloud infrastructure, is very secure. In some cases, even more secure than the IT infrastructure that some utilities have. And the other thing is that it really reduces costs. For the utilities, they don't need to maintain this infrastructure on their own. The service provider basically maintain it for them. So I think in our case, it required quite a few sessions. It wasn't easy. It's still ongoing to convince everybody that really the cloud infrastructure is secured as advertised. But I think there's a change, and because many, many in other domains, they are moving to cloud solutions because of all the advantages related to that. So I think also the water industry is also shifting towards this area.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I can weigh in on that. I agree. We had a big issue around the management of the meter data until it was pointed out that the same technologies are used for financial transactions, so which have already been doing that for years. So when we figured, if the banks are transferring funds electronically through secure networks or through, through cloud-based technologies, we probably got a little bit more comfortable with our meter data flowing that way. So I think it is kind of a, as people become more familiar with the different applications that are already being done in a very secure way, that level, comfort level starts to increase.
Okay. Quick questions after coming in that I think I can address to Andreas. Andreas, how do you see the real-time online sensing technology that you provide being used in remote small communities with small budgets?
Yeah,
I noticed on your slide that it's an area that you see growth in. So,
yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I see growth from a business perspective, but from people's perspective, a consumer's perspective, I see a huge deficit here because we know that most of accidents, most of people getting sick from water consumption is in small communities, and many of those don't have any kind of water monitoring. And probably the odd one sample per month, but nothing in between. So I think that really from a public health perspective, those small communities must be addressed. And this is only possible by a combination of very robust technology. So because these people don't have any skilled managers or skilled engineers available, very cost-efficient sensors, very simple cost-efficient sensors, and at the same time, a data transfer system that automatically transfers those data into a central place where informed people can interpret the data coming in. So I think this is a really one of the major challenges, and I'm thinking on actually all of the continents, because no matter if that's the USA or Europe or southern of Europe or China, India, whatever, that problem is everywhere that small communities don't have any kind of water quality monitoring.
And I guess one question, and again it harks back to one of the points that Mark made, particularly in Western countries. It's not clear how, other than risk mitigation, it's not clear how implementing such strategies by utilities is actually going to save them money. They, in terms of regulatory compliance, until regulators come on board and approve the use of real-time online sensing as a means of sampling compliance, then it's not going to lead to an increase in or a decrease in costs associated with compliance, rather risk. And do you see that as, and I guess I'll open the floor to everyone, is this a major barrier to the to the use of real-time online sensing for water quality monitoring?
I just add one sentence on that from a European perspective, because there is this huge pressure from European Commission that water quality has to be maintained and assured at the point of entry and not only at the water treatment plant. So this makes this caused a lot of discussion in the water utilities, and this is something utilities are really now considering how and in which way they can achieve to be able to do QAQC at the point of entry. I think this will be a big driver actually.
Mark, do you want to jump in there?
Well, I mean, I think Andreas was just saying, when a regulation requires it like that, it certainly opens the door, for the bacteriological monitoring in the United States is very prescribed on how that's done. And so I do think that, bringing the regulators into this, there's clearly online continuous monitoring is much more effective at monitoring of events, problems with short-term contamination of water, of which grab sampling will never be able to capture. And yet the regulations are cemented into an approach that kind of requires grab sampling. So I think it's important to have the research to demonstrate how water quality is improved and how reliability is improved to help drive the regulators to at least open this for larger utilities. In discussion with some of the colleagues, like in Los Angeles, it takes them 8 hours just to drive through the town to collect samples. And so they have to have multiple, you know, drivers because the traffic's so bad to try to collect the samples and get them back to the lab. And so this would clearly be cost beneficial for large systems, maybe not necessarily for small systems. We don't have a flexibility in being able to have multiple approaches for regulatory compliance. So I do see it as a major obstacle to where the technology, you know, where we want to do. So it's important to engage them into this discussion.
I mean, just one remark that where the U.S. EPA has now accepted online sensors like chlorine monitoring, they have accepted this as a replacement for grab sampling. I think this was a huge move of the U.S. EPA and with this towards the direction that Mark is indicating.
I think we mustn't forget also, sorry, it's Neil here, that that a lot of data coming out of the back end of either a treatment works or a possible treatment plant can also provide a lot of feedback data to control, process control, and in actual fact, cost savings on process. So, you know, for example, if you're putting a certain treatment chemical in a works or your blowers need to be controlled at a certain rate and, you know, your data's coming out, you can still feed back into the process to make savings there. So, and equally, you know, there's opportunities for feed forward, so monitoring the either the inlet water or the wastewater. So as well as the legislation drivers, the legislative drivers, and there is still some opportunity for process improvement.
Okay, well, I think we have time for one more question, which I think I'm going to direct at Amy and Andreas. How do you contend with fouling of the sensors in wastewater? And this is one issue that I have heard in the past, is that the main issue with real-time online sensing is making them robust enough to handle fouling and stormwater flows. And is this an issue that do you see this as an issue?
I can provide information on clean water. Actually, fouling also occurs in the drinking water. So basically, it's maintenance. I mean, for our sensors, we have about two maintenance cycles every year. And the maintenance operations are basically cleaning the sensors, recalibrating the sensors, and removing fouling. And I think for maybe it's utility specific for what we are doing in Singapore with the water quality measurements, the six-month cycle are sufficient to for this application, and the fouling doesn't affect the data in this time duration. Wastewater, we don't have experienced.
Okay. Andreas, could you speak to the potential for wastewater?
Oh, yeah. I mean, both clean water and wastewater. On the clean water side, we, in stations, we obviously use turning motorized brushes that are very efficient to take away any kind of fouling. The first means is always mathematical compensation of drift. That's the first and most intelligent way to do it. Then there is coating of optics if it's an optical sensor, and there is ways in the design of electrochemical sensors to compensate fouling by, for example, an additional reference electrode. And in wastewater, we always use pressure air on all our sensors, which is very reliable in almost all kind of wastewater, even in the raw sewage, in wastewater, raw sewage, and in rivers. It's always pressurized air blast that we use for cleaning.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going, Connor. There are some new technologies out there that are really non-contact as well, so that's probably the best way to combat any fouling, is not even to be in contact. So again, there's some UV near infrared technologies that are being developed. There's also some headspace analysis as well, which really sort of eliminate the fouling side of things. But again, you know, they're a little bit blue sky, and it all becomes fairly disruptive technology. But but those things, somebody's got to champion them and bring them to the market. And as Mark was saying, you know, it sounds great that American Water are happy to let companies demonstrate and things, so that sounds good.
Absolutely. Well, on that positive note, I'm afraid I'm going to have to draw proceedings to a close. I hope we've addressed all your questions. If you have any further questions, feel free to get in touch with myself or any of my colleagues at Blue Tech Research as we are distributing the slide deck and presentation recording. I'd like to invite you to our upcoming webinar on May 23rd on Sludge to Energy, Tapping into Biogas. So thank you for your participation, and if you have any further questions, don't hesitate to get in touch. I'm sure we'll be able to pass your questions on to our panelists. So thank you again to my panelists, and thanks for your attention for the past hour and a half.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does bring us to the conclusion of our call today. You now may disconnect. Have a wonderful afternoon.